So we're looking at the K by Q. The purpose of the study was to examine the relationship of practice and exam performance. I've got almost 30 years in on trying to figure out how to improve exam performance, because when I was a kid, I bought into the idea that well-written exams aren't bullshit, that well-written exams actually find out whether you know what you're doing or not. And that if you limit the scope of what you're trying to study in the exam, and you couple it with homework, that you can actually get an idea of what people are going to be able to do. That's why we run the courses the way we do. The homework is pointed at being able to actually do the shit. Go home with a list of questions, a set of data, and come back with answers to those questions. The exams focus on the ability to do shit on the fly, because sometimes you're not going to be allowed to pick it up and go home. Sometimes people are going to walk up to you, and as that great line from the movie Firebirds, is this a quiz? Your whole life's a quiz, young man. People are always watching to see if you should be elevated to the next level or stuck where you are. And if you're the one who can pull this out of wherever you pull these things out of and look good in a crowd in a hurry, you get the next toy. So, always trying to better understand the relationship between practice and exam performance, because I'm going to jack that exam performance up. Two aspects of practice were selected for study: the difficulty of the practice and the number of practices. Number of practices have been studied forever. The difficulty of practice got sexy about 15 years ago. The problem is that the people who decided to make it sexy decided that the best thing to do was to, what I will say, coddle. To give people simpler practice than exam, because it was all about self-confidence and, yes, you got it, self-image. This was the same time that we took dodgeball away from children, because some of them got their ass kicked and didn't feel good about themselves. But you know that this is why I'm not a therapist. The practice difficulty was a three-condition variables. Practice problems were either about the same difficulty as the exam problems, they were easier than the exam problems, or they were more difficult than the exam problems. Notice the coding. They're not lined up on a continuum. They're categorically different. And it's pretty glib. There's 2 years' work went into an operational definition and an instantiation of that, so we had enough practices and exams so that we'd actually pull this off. It's one thing to say, as difficult as. It's something else to actually instantiate it. Pain in the ass. Different sections of the course were randomly assigned to receive the three difficulty levels. Why not? That was determined by where we intended to publish this. It was the Journal of Educational Research, and they want random assignment. As a group, they've never really gone on to embrace ongoing equivalence. If you've got random assignment, people start talking in causal terms, even though obviously we didn't have ongoing equivalence control. Students were permitted to complete as many practice problems as they liked, receiving very complete feedback after each problem, which we hope they actually read, and we're going to act as if they did. The dependent variable is performance on the exam. So we got a couple of things that we need to do. We need to build dummy codes. I decided to use the same as the comparison group because I wanted to know if there was a difference shifting from same to easier, and if there was a difference shifting from same to harder. This takes away from me the comparison of easier and harder, and I'm okay with that because that wasn't the point. The point was to ask whether either of these transitions has an effect. I got to go build myself a centered number of practices. And for this first pass, I decided to actually do mean centering. Although I would totally understand if somebody said, oh, come on, let's just center it at 6 and call it good. Okay, because 6 is a real number of practices. And I need interaction terms. And remember that because I have two dummy codes to represent three groups, I need two interaction terms. We set it all up this way so we could plug it into a regression.
John, basic question. What happens if you don't center?
If you don't center, A is going to change. It's going to tell you what's the expected value for somebody who was in the comparison group and had zero practices. It's going to compare the groups at zero practices. And everything else is going to tell you the same information. Except that, in this one we're not so bad, but when we get into the nonlinear models, where we're multiplying a lot more stuff and we're adding variables in, it magnifies the collinearity among the variables to not center, and you can get up to the point that it perturbs the math. If you pick up a third of the books nowadays, and all of the books 20 years ago, they were done with raw data. I mean, most of the time, all it does is it gives you a not meaningful set of group comparisons. And that's why GLM and even ANOVA models in most packages do that correction at the mean for you. They don't make you change anything. They do it for you. Because that's where the most of our data is. That's where we're going to make our comparisons. Does that help? So all that we do is we plug in the number centered, two practice codes, two interaction terms. We account for a tremendous amount of the variance, which is believable even with a small sample size. And that's our picture. Specifically, it tells us that, let's see, D1, this is the old coding system. I should just rewrite this sometime with the real codes in it, because I can't remember what group's what. So DC1 is comparing easier to same. So, at the average amount of practice, the easier group does 16 points poorer than the same group, which is significant. The harder group does about 4 points better than the same group, which is not significant. But again, this is not an overall comparison. This is a comparison at the average. These interaction terms warn us that we don't want to overgeneralize this effect or this non-effect. There's interesting things coming. Because there's a significant change in group difference as practice changes for both groups. So at this point, while you can interpret each of these, and I do for you, because I love you, let's go get a picture. Because it takes a very long time before you can look at those regression weights and think about how the height and the slope and the height change and the slope and give you that picture. And even if you can do it, your audience can't. So we got this picture. And this picture tells us that while there's no difference between same and harder at an average amount of practice, pretty soon there is. It also seems to tell us that things get really interesting below 4 practices. Because below 4 practices, the people doing the easier do better. Now notice that do better over here is betterer than do better over here. Meanwhile, this group did better than this group. They both suck. Okay? So this is bad. So this tells you that, you know, fewer than about, well, if you want to get graduate school passing performance, you need at least 7 reps. And if you want to get that with the same difficulty, you need to get out around 9 reps. And this is on average, which means half of this group's below that. And that you can't do it at all with this group. Okay, that's the story. Not just a crossover, a story about what does it take to get someone to be successful? Your only shot at success is same or harder, and probably more reps than the little darlings want to do. That's when teaching becomes parenting. or bribery or fascism, depending upon how you want to think about it. So we can figure out how much of a practice effect we're going to get for each group, and both the direction and the extent of that. And we can also have our group comparison everywhere, anywhere we want. If we wanted to say, all right, what's going on at 10 practices? We recenter at 10, and it's going to tell us that this group does significantly better than that, and this group does significantly poorer than that. And if we wanted to compare these two, which we really don't need to, I mean, most people are going to let you get away with, if this is significantly bigger and this is significantly smaller, they're significantly different. But if they don't let us, recode it. Make one of these the target group or the comparison group. And so that's what we did here. We leave same as the comparison group. And mean centering, or about 6. And here's what happens if we decide we want to look at a 10-group difference, or a 10-point difference. We leave the coding alone, we change the centering, and that's going to require different interaction terms. When we plug all that in, we get back exactly the same information. We haven't changed data. We haven't changed model. This has to be the same information. But the way it presents that information is now different. This was talking about the performance of the same group at 5.7 practices. Now it's talking about the performance of the same group at 10 practices. It's on the same line, just at a different point in the same line. Now we're talking about a 44-point difference, with the same group being better than easy, a 22-point with the hard group being better than same. Slope doesn't change. Slope differences don't change. These three numbers are different because we're looking at a different point on the x-axis. Once again, instead of looking here at 5.7, we're looking here at 10. Same thing we did up here. Here's a complete set of alternative dummy codings. Now here's the thing. We don't need all three to get my group comparisons. Because every one of these gives us two group comparisons. So we get two, and either one of these will give us the third. The reason we need all three of these suckers is so that we can get the slope of each group's line with a significance test. Okay? If we, for any one of them, we get the slope of a particular line and its test, and then these interaction terms tell us if the other lines are significantly different from it, but it doesn't tell us for certain, for p-value, whether the other lines have positive or negative slope. And this is the thing that SPSS does worst. Because it has the expected marginal means, it'll let you have group differences anywhere you want, but it doesn't have any mechanism within the model for telling it, now I want you to change what's the control group. You got to go back and either in regression change the dummy coding, or in GLM change the unit coding. Either will work. But it's kind of annoying. So the model does pretty well. Still, same line, same lines, same lines. The only thing that differs is which line has which dots, dashes, or solid lines, because we've shifted which the computator thinks is the comparison group. But it's the same model over and over and over. The same is 3.2 and 64. Same model. We haven't changed the model. We've only changed what parts of it we directly represent. And so here what I'm doing is gathering up where you get what information. Because this is the complete set of information that you want. So the corrected at the means, we get different pairwise comparisons from different codings. We only get the slope from a particular set of codings, and we get the slope differences in a nicely redundant manner. Yeah.
So here we assume all of them have the same number of practices.
No, for each person we measured how many times they practiced.
Oh, okay.
That's a between group, non-manipulated variable. But yeah, there's other ways we could have done this. But this was set up as a between groups model. The notion being that when we're talking about taking tests, the ecological validity is you take that test once after practicing a certain number of times. I'm not really interested in this particular application. I'm not interested in watching you change. I want to be able to predict how well you're going to do in a one-shot scenario. So again, from an ecological validity perspective, a between groups design gave me what I was looking for. When you run this as a within groups design, you do get different results. Because when you have to take people's motivational structure and prior experience into account to predict what's going to be the best way to prep them. There are some people who do best with easy. And they get the nicest change with easy. But now we're talking about a six-way with repeated measures. And I didn't show you that today. It's not that I don't love you. It's just that whole lecture on complexity tolerance, I was going to drop you into the middle of a six-way. Yeah.
Or if you wanted to capture something like that, then it would be more practical to use like MLM where you
absolutely
just throw it all in and get the between them with their cross time.
Yeah, in my opinion, if you go to a repeated measures design and you don't have dozens of steps, hierarchical linear modeling works better than everything else I know. If you give me enough steps, I'm going to go back and do old-fashioned time series designs because the autocorrelation controls are more malleable and I can try different models instead of the package deciding what theory I'm going to use for autocorrelation. And since I know that in this area, autocorrelation is an individual differences variable, I want that kind of control. But did you understand why we did it as between instead of within?
Yeah, I think so.
I refer to it as ecological validity. When I'm giving these kids tests, they study once, take the test once. Now we have a retake, but that's a whole new thing. I'm not really interested in I don't want the most efficient curve there. I want to get to the best place efficiently as possible.
You want the snapshot.
I want the snapshot because the snapshot is ecologically valid. So, this is what happens if we're going to use Uninova, which is GLM, instead. And what we want to do is I've decided that since I have the expected marginal means function, I want to see how the groups differ at 2, 4, 6, 8, and 10 practices. Because as much as I would love to practice you 14 or 18 times, there's this silly thing called your life and other classes and sleep. Other interfering shit like that. So let's, and I chewed it off in 2-unit steps because I felt like it. We could chew it off in 1-unit steps. It just gets longer. But remember that we've mean-centered that variable. We don't absolutely have to, especially for the linear model. When we get into the quadratic models, even within GLM, I'm just happier. But you might run into somebody who says, don't fucking do that. If we're going to work with the mean-centered, we have to recognize that we've mean-centered that. And so when we want to test it too, we have to tell it to test at -3.792. And so, dv by grouping variable with my centered variable, and then all those expected marginal means, always comparing the three groups. This tells it that I want the adjusted means. This tells us that I want the t-test pairwise comparisons of those marginal means. And this tells it what margin to take it at. A thing that a lot of people think is cool about the GLM is that because it uses 0.5 negative 0.5 effect coding, that practice F test is a main effect in the factorial tradition. Overall, there's something going on. Can't tell you where, can't tell you if it's conditional or not, but something going on. And a lot of people, especially people coming out of ANOVA traditions and structural modeling traditions, are comforted by that number. Give them what's comfortable as long as it doesn't mislead. Here's the good shit. Because this is the specification. Again, dramatically incomplete in terms of specific bits of information, but complete in terms of defining the model. These numbers are exactly the same numbers we got out of the regression because we told it the same model. We coded it the same. We centered it the same. We included the same terms. Voila. Now here, and I if you've got a good enough version of Adobe, you can actually expand each of these pictures so that you can see it more easily. If that doesn't work, if you go up here and replace the PDF with DOC, you can get the original doc file, and then you can take each of those pictures and expand them, put them on a separate page, whatever you want to do. I was going for comparability. And so what it does is it says, again, something that GLM gives you that regression doesn't, these are the group means at two practices. There's a difference among them, and that's your pairwise pattern. And 4, and 6, and 8, and 10. We're going to go through a recoding just so we can get the regression slope, the practice regression weight, for each group in turn. We already have it for same. Now we're just going to redo this so the highest coded group is now easy. And so that regression weight and that significance test is for easy. And easy shows a significant negative slope. More practice makes things more worser. And now we're going to get that regression slope for hard. This is the same thing we did up here when we changed from the back black line being the comparison group to the blue line being the comparison group. There's the same group differences. We've just changed which ones we get. So all of this is just an attempt to more completely articulate this here picture.